Welcome to the teleconference with Tom Anderson on August 30th, 2010. Tom Anderson is a former banker and the author of the book that we're talking about today, titled Your Place in the World, Creating a Life of Vision, Purpose, and Service. This is Judy Neal. I'm your host for the call, and this call is being sponsored by the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace at the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. So welcome, Tom. I'm glad to have you with me on the call today.
Well, thank you, Judy. It's really nice to be here.
So let me give you a little bit of an overview of how the call is going to go. This call is being recorded, and it will be available on the Tyson Center website in a few days. And we're going to begin with an opening reflection. Then we'll have a moment of silence, and then I will introduce Tom. And Tom and I will talk for about 20 minutes. I'll be asking Tom some questions about his book. Then we'll open it up for the second half of the call where all of you can ask questions or comment on Tom's book or things that Tom has said. And then we'll have a bit of a closing, some announcements from me and some announcements from Tom. So that's our structure for today, and we're glad that everyone is with us. It looks like we've got quite a number of callers. More and more people are joining us every minute. So I'm going to begin with an opening reflection, and that will be followed by a moment of silence. And this reflection comes from Tom's book, Your Place in the World. Tom writes, "For every person who is asking themselves difficult questions about their lives, there are countless others who, in spite of having a very good life, are haunted by dreams of another way of living. I believe it is time for us to listen to this yearning. It is time to question the source of this quiet desperation and to begin to explore our souls with the intention of discovering the unique gifts we hold within. I also believe the sense of yearning we are feeling is coming not just from within us, but from the soul of the earth as well. The earth is desperate for us to wake up to our own deeper meaning and purpose. The world cries out for our true gifts, and our souls answer through the yearning we feel for something else, something different than the story we have been telling ourselves as individuals and as a society." And for those of you who have Tom's book, Your Place in the World, that's on page 26. So please join me in just a brief moment of silence as we connect with each other and with our soul's yearning. Thank you so much. So I'd like to introduce Tom to you with a little bit of background from his bio. And Tom was born and raised in Florida and graduated from Florida State University with a Bachelor of Science degree in finance and real estate. Shortly after graduation, he embarked on what would be a successful 25-year career in commercial real estate development and mortgage banking. And if you met Tom, you wouldn't actually think he's old enough to have a 25-year career in commercial real estate development and mortgage banking. He's quite young and energetic and vibrant human being, and I hope that in some way that you'll get a chance to meet him and enjoy his incredible presence. Now, Tom moved to Kansas City in the summer of 2000 with his wife and two young children, and shortly thereafter joined a Midwest-based mortgage banking company. And he quickly rose to the position of senior vice president in charge of loan production for the Kansas City office. And Tom might be telling us a little bit more about his story, but while his career in mortgage banking provided a good living for himself and his family, it did little to feed his soul. So in 2008, Tom resigned his position to devote full-time attention to his passions, which are writing, teaching, and public speaking. And today, Tom describes himself as an activator of purpose, and he serves individuals from all walks of life that are feeling an inner urge to serve in a bigger way, but are unsure of how to begin. Tom is a life coach. He's an inspirational speaker, a vision quest guide, and as I mentioned earlier, the author of Your Place in the World, Creating a Life of Vision, Purpose, and Service. And Tom is now heading up an effort hosted at the Unity Church of Overland Park called the Institute for Sustainable Prosperity. And they're seeking to bridge the gap between the world of business and spirituality in the Kansas City area. Tom believes that we all carry within us a gift that can fuel a dream, create an abundant life, and even change the world. So again, Tom, welcome. I'm so delighted that you're with us. And I really want to tell you how much I enjoyed reading your book. I know I've told you this previously, but I want to share that with the people who are on this call to tell people what I, my impressions, just very briefly, of how well it's written, how soulfully it's written, and how practically it's written. It's extremely well organized. You've told a lot of stories. You've given us lots of things to do to help us get a greater sense of your place, our places in the world. So can you start by telling us about the title of the book and why did you call it Your Place in the World?
Well, first, Judy, thank you for that wonderful introduction. And yes, it's true. I started my career in real estate at the age of 10. I was a prodigy, so that's probably why you can't believe that I spent 25 years in the business.
That explains it.
Your place in the world. First off, I also want to say that the passage that you selected from the book, it's amazing that you would. It's not amazing. I guess that it's a statement to the fact that when I was writing the book, that passage really sums up for me what I wanted to get across, and kind of this idea that there's a reciprocal yearning that I believe is coming from the hearts and souls of men and women all over the planet, and is at the same time responding to a yearning that I believe that is coming from the planet as well. In this time when things are so complicated, when things are moving so quickly, and the challenges that we face are so seemingly daunting, it's perfect in my way of thinking that the awakening that is occurring with a lot of people, the spiritual awakening that people are feeling, is happening at the time when I think we need it the most. So I'm glad that you selected that passage to share. Having said that kind of segues into answering the question that you asked about the title of the book, Your Place in the World. The journey for me has been one of finding a sense of belonging, and I talk about it in the book. I use the metaphor of the hero's journey and the search for a place, and it's not a physical place. It's people that you feel at one with, that you feel that you can be in service to, and which in turn are serving you and your own growth. It's a dual path. It's a path between an inner journey to finding our own true natures, at the same time that we're reaching out to finding a place of connection, a sense of connection to something bigger than ourselves. And that's that idea of a place in the world. It's a place where we feel a natural fit. It's a cause to which we feel that we can devote our lives. And it's a sense of coming home. Our ultimate place of belonging is something that I think we carry with us, but we have a difficult time sometimes seeing that until we can start looking to the outer world, to the mirrors that are around us that reflect our gift back to us. So that's where that comes from. It's the whole book is a sense of a journey. And it's a sense of a journey outward that is almost a circular path back to the place that we start from again. But it's this idea that when we come back around again, we see it again as if for the first time.
Yeah, I love that quote. I forget who the person is. The poem, is it Percy or Shelley? Yeah, one of the English poets talks about seeing the world anew for the first time after we've come back around.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And one of the stories or threads you use throughout the book is your own story of your discovering your place in the world and the role of the Vision Quest in being very transformative for you. Can you talk a little bit about a Vision Quest and how it's related to Native American culture and to other cultures as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes. There is, when I talk to people about Vision Quest, there's in this country and in many places around the world, there's a natural connection to the Native American tradition of the Vision Quest. And there are aspects of the Native American tradition that, in the way I do Vision Quest, the way my teachers do Vision Quest, and the way I do Vision Quest, there are aspects of the Native American tradition in that. But we do not, we don't hold ourselves out to be either a Native American Vision Quest or a replacement of it or anything like that. When I think of the idea of the Vision Quest, it's really more in a broader transcultural kind of thinking. And it's an idea of a rite of passage, and these ceremonies have actually been found in cultures all over the world, in all different time frames, and essentially, the Vision Quest is a ceremonial reenactment of another pan-cultural idea, which is the myth of the hero's journey that Joseph Campbell talked about so much in his book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and all the other work that Campbell did throughout his lifetime. And so what I've attempted to do with this book, I'm a big fan of Campbell's work, of Joseph Campbell's work, and his I cite him as a reference throughout this book for a lot of his concepts and the work that he did. But what I've attempted to do with this book is take that idea of the tangible ceremony of the Vision Quest as a representation of the hero's journey, and then to give the reader ways that they can not just understand the process intellectually, but experience it with their bodies, with their minds, with their hearts, through the process of the activities that are in the book and the reflection questions that are put throughout the book. And then in addition, I use my own story of my own Vision Quest, how I was called to it, and the stages that I went through in the Vision Quest as just kind of a storyline that the whole book kind of hangs on. It's the thread that kind of connects the story from one place to the next.
Well, and so maybe you could tell us a little bit about what made you decide to go on a Vision Quest and you know, anything that, I know we don't have a lot of time, but, and it takes the whole book for you to share your story, but maybe some things that you could share about your story, particularly this idea of peacemaker and its role in your life.
Well, I should say that the introduction told a little bit about my background, and I experienced what Joseph Campbell talks about as the call to adventure, as the start of the hero's journey, at a point in my life where I really had to make a decision. It actually was a pivotal moment in my life when I was just minding my own business at my office one day when my boss came in to let me know he's ready to make me a partner in the firm, and it was a place that I had to make a decision. And although it was everything I ever wanted, it absolutely was not speaking to my heart and soul at all. And so about that time, I found out about this idea of a Vision Quest, went off on one, and had a really a series of pretty amazing experiences that really began happening for me even at the moment that I decided to take the journey, which is something that I even talk about in the book, that as soon as we even notice that there's something calling to us, as soon as we even notice that there's something yearning from our soul, as I describe it, just bringing our attention to it starts a series of events that will start unfolding for us in our lives to help that whole journey begin its process of revealing itself to us.
Yeah, in the spiritual and business literature, there's more and more being written about synchronicities and their importance. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Absolutely, absolutely. this is diverging a little bit from the question about Peacemaker, which probably requires an entire afternoon seminar to talk about. But
okay, we'll schedule you for that soon.
as an example, I began when I committed to take the Vision Quest. It was about 3 months in advance of the actual date I was going to leave, and I had all kinds of things going on in my life, and the Vision Quest was going to take me off into the wilderness for about 10 days, completely removed from any connection to the outer world through a cell phone or computers or anything like that. And so I wanted to be able to be in a place when I left town that I wouldn't have anything on my mind back home to distract me. I didn't want to have to worry about anything going on at the office or any of the various volunteer activities I was involved in leadership capacities. And I just kind of put that out there, that was my goal, to have that happen. And I'll never forget coming into my office about a week before it was time to leave and looking at my desk, and it was entirely clean. There was absolutely nothing on my desk that was going to require my attention. Everything I was working on either kind of drifted away, or it kind of died on its own, or it kind of was postponed for a few weeks. There was nothing to distract me. And it was that kind of an experience that I was having happen to me leading up to this time, of just one door opening while another door was closing behind me, just as if once I decided this is the path I'm going to walk, there was no way I could do anything but walk that path. So it was a pretty amazing and certainly a life-changing experience for me. The idea of Peacemaker that I talk about in the book that you asked about was something that was revealed through a series of events very early in the Vision Quest. And, you know, one of the things I talk about is a lot of times I work with people that come to my workshops or my programs, and they have a question around who it is, what is their purpose in the world. And a lot of times that idea of purpose gets framed around the idea of vocation. What kind of job am I supposed to have? What kind of, you know, do I take the job with the bank? Do I pursue this idea of teaching? What kind of job am I supposed to have in the world? And what I'm constantly leading people back to, or helping them lead themselves back to, is the idea that it's not about the job we have. It's about what is the essential nature that we have been born to bring into the world. And it's not do I sell insurance or do I teach high school. It's who am I at depth? This idea of Peacemaker was actually an image that came to me through the process of my Vision Quest. And it's the kind of thing that is more of a question than it's an answer. Powerful questions can guide us and lead us so much more directly than answers can sometimes. And for me, the idea of what is Peacemaker and how do I continue to show up in the world embodying that idea of Peacemaker has been this process of just an ever-deepening and unfolding realization of the kind of man that I've been born to be.
It's a lifelong journey.
Yes, it is.
I love what Richard Bach says in Jonathan Livingston Seagull. It wasn't that book. It was another one, but Illusions. And he says, how do you know when your mission in life is complete? And the answer is, if you're still here, it's not. And so if your mission and core and essence is Peacemaker, then that becomes the lifelong journey. You're still here, so that's still part of who you are and your mission in this lifetime.
That's right.
Yeah, and it was the Vision Quest process.
When I came back from the Vision Quest, I started asking, okay, what is Peacemaker? How does Peacemaker show up in the world? And the first thing I did is I started looking for different kind of roles. Were there places that I could volunteer my time and bring my skill sets to that in the realm of peacemaking? And the more I spent, the more time I spent with this question, the more I realized that it was as much about the energy of being peacemaker it was more about that than it was about any kind of roles that I was to play in the world. There is always a deeper level of peace, as an example, that I can find within myself. At the same time, there's always another level of peace as a concept that we can search for or try to work towards in the greater world. And I can't do one without the other. They both rely on each other in order to be this energy, this essence that I'm growing towards.
Mm-hmm. And you've alluded to this idea that vision quest, the way you've written the book, vision quest and finding a sense of what our core essence is, that's a part of the book. And so are you suggesting that everyone go on a vision quest? I mean, you and I talked about, there are people on this call who are my age, nearing retirement age, and, you know, I don't sleep on the ground anymore. And yet,
well, I've had more than a few people say that the next time I do a vision quest at the Ritz-Carlton, they're all over it.
So. Yeah, me too. But so how does this concept of vision quest or the practice a vision quest apply to the lives of ordinary people, and is there an application in the business world?
Yes, to answer the last question. And one of the things when I came back from my vision quest, I in many respects I was like a kid with a new toy. I mean, I'd found this process, and I'd been on a spiritual journey for 15 to 20 years at that point in time, and had not experienced something like this before. And, you know, like a lot of things, I felt like, well, everybody needs to go do this. But it became quickly apparent to me that everybody wasn't up for spending 10 days in the wilderness and sleeping on the ground and some of the other rather physical hardships that you have to go through. Having said that, I will tell you that the last vision quest that I guided in Death Valley about a year and a half ago, we had a man that was, I think he was 72, 73 years old, but came all the way from Australia to participate. So it is something that's possible for anybody of, you know, all kinds of age ranges, for sure. But I wanted to be able to start creating opportunities for people to experience the process itself without necessarily having to face the physical hardships. The book is one of the ways that I have done that. And I give folks activities in the book that they can experience, some of which sitting in the comfort of their own homes. Some might be as simple as just a day-long walk in a natural or wilderness area, you know, within a drive of their house or something. So it doesn't require, although the vision quest is something that I really recommend to anybody that is feeling called to do it, it's not entirely necessary in order to experience these phases of the hero's journey. And the other thing that I do in the book is I also suggest that some of the things that you're already experiencing in your own life are exactly the processes of the hero's journey and the phases themselves. There are basically three phases to the journey. It's the first phase is the severance, which is the place where we step away from that which we've known. It's in the stories. It's the idea of the character stepping out of the door of their home. I love the story of the Hobbit or the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where the Hobbit character, who's never wanted to walk very far from their comfortable shire, has to step away into this land of the unknown in order to find what it is that they're called to find. And so the first phase is the severance, where we step away from that we've known. The second phase is called the threshold. And it's kind of one of a wandering time. It's an in-between space. It's a place of not knowing instead of a place of knowing. And then in that wandering period is where we find the messages that we need to find. In Joseph Campbell's model, it's called the hero's boon, B-O-O-N, which is something that we have to bring back. It's something of power and importance that we have to find and retrieve and then bring back again through a process of incorporation, which is the third phase, back to the world, back to our people, bringing our boon with us to make the world a better place. So what I help people understand is that sometimes they're standing at this place and they have all these problems confronting them, and they're trying to figure out, how do I get from where I am to where I want to be? And oftentimes when I'm coaching people or leading them through a program at a workshop, it can be a little difficult to get the mind around the fact that in order to get where we want to be, sometimes we have to completely let go of where we are. We have to go through the severance, and we have to be comfortable being in a place in the unknown for a while, just being in a place of the question, before we can find the answer and then return back again. So it's just when I start pointing out the way that these phases show up, a lot of times people's light bulbs go on, and it's like, ah, okay, I've seen where that's shown up in my life. I can be in this space of not knowing for a while and be comfortable here knowing that it's just part of this journey that I'm walking.
Yeah, I've seen that in my own life for sure, and have come to trust that not knowing space, that liminal space, is actually one of the most creative spaces there is. It's just that we can't see what's happening. It's happening
right.
On a mystical or spiritual or invisible level. But it sure is easier if you trust it than fight it.
That's right. So, I think that in our culture, we're infatuated with what I describe as kind of an upward sloping line, as if life is supposed to be about this constant and steady rate of progress and growth. And it isn't that way. There is the only thing that really shows up that way in the world as we know it is cancer, that is constantly growing until the point that it takes over its host and kills its host. But the process of the human experience naturally has periods of what we would sometimes call a down period. It naturally has these in-between phases of just being in a place of germination, of allowing the questions to work on us so that we can come back again. It's the metaphor of a seed planted in the dark soil. It takes a while to put down roots before it sends up its shoot. We, not necessarily everybody on this call necessarily, but as a culture, we don't much care for those spaces. We want to try to get through them as quickly as possible, but there's value there. There's great value in those so-called dark times.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Let me ask you just a couple more questions, and then we're going to open it up to everyone. And one of them is about the subtitle of your book. So the subtitle is Creating a Life of Vision, Purpose, and Service. What do you mean by each of these three things, vision, purpose, and service?
Well, just very briefly, I define vision in the book as being the greatest dream we can dream for the world. It's when we look out on the world and we start noticing where we see things that are not as we would like them to be, and it's not from a perspective of, well, I don't like the fact that my spouse doesn't pick up their socks from the floor. It's when we look out on the world and we say, and we find that our attention is being drawn to places in the world where we see children that are hungry, or we see places where we're not being as good a stewards of the natural resources and the planet as we could be. Or we look out and we see that there is a need for a different kind of leadership in our organizations. It's the vision is this great dream that inspires us to take the journey, to inspires us to interact with the world in a bigger way, to try to fulfill this dream, to make the big changes that we want to see made in our lifetime or in our children's lifetimes. Purpose is the individual part of that dream that is ours to fulfill. For instance, you and I could have a similar vision that we have a vision for a different kind of, say, leadership in the world. But you have a particular piece of that dream that you've been born to fulfill, and I have a particular piece of the dream that I've been born to fulfill. So when I talk about purpose, I'm talking about it from the standpoint of the gifts of the soul. What is it that we have brought in with us into this lifetime that is our unique and particular way of showing up in the world that will help to fulfill that vision? The third idea that I bring to this, and it's something that as people have read this book, they've reflected back to me that this is something that they haven't quite seen talked about in some of the other work that's out there in exactly the same way anyway. And that's the idea of service. And it's service, the way I talk about it here is, and it's probably not a great term because it's not broad enough, but it's really an essence of energy. It's the energy that connects purpose and vision together and makes it all work. It's the idea that as I am discovering more about myself, it's not just so that I can be happier or more prosperous or live a more fulfilling life. And as I am seeking to to manifest this vision I have in the world, it's not just so that I can feel better about the world or so that, you know, some corner of the world can be improved as I see it should be improved. It's the idea that everything we do is done in service to something that is bigger than ourselves. I started looking at this idea of these three parts when I started realizing how the number three shows up so frequently in all of our mythologies of the world and in many of our spiritual traditions. And this idea of vision, purpose, and service just kind of unfolded for me at the same time as I was looking for how I brought my messages and the lessons that I picked up on the vision quest back out into the world. So those are the three ideas that are kind of that's kind of the goal that is running through the book, as I help people find a way of articulating their vision, of understanding their purpose, and then of figuring out the particular way that they're to bring it into balance together through the energy of service.
Thank you so much. And what you say about service is so very beautiful. Most people use that word in terms of action, and certainly it incorporates action, but you're also talking about a level of consciousness or a way of being that's not ego-centered, but is other-centered.
And that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, my very last question, and then we're going to open it up, is, Tom, what is your soul yearning for now?
You know, I think that at its core, there's an idea of becoming better at listening. I think that what I am, it's interesting, I find that my own particular growing edge, as I experience it in my own personal life, is so often, and I'm sure many of the callers can relate to this, oftentimes our growing edge is also indicative of the kind of, you know, we start seeing things going on in the world, and we say, well, I sure wish people would be better at X. And then suddenly we realize, well, wait, that's also my growing edge. And what I've been really working with recently in a lot of the work is that I'm here to listen at a different kind of way. And I'm interested in finding ways that people can learn to listen to one another as well, not just with our ears or our minds, but also with our hearts and with our souls. And so what's calling to me and what's yearning within me is this essence of discovering what it means to truly listen.
Thank you. It makes me think about a friend of mine, Mel Toomey, talks about generative listening, and that's listening at such a deep level that as you listen other things into being that didn't exist before.
Yes, that's right.
The quality of your listening allows something else to emerge.
Right.
Yeah.
There's something that's happening between us that is beginning to emerge through the process of listening to one another that never existed quite the same way before.
Well, and I think we would add listening
to that emergence is the next piece of it, is what is it that's emerging in this moment because of our interaction.
Well, and I think for most of the people on this call, that is also listening to spirit or God or the universe or whatever words you might use, but that there's a listening to each other and through each other, that's something greater that guides us.
That's right.
Well, on that note, let's open the call up, and the way we're going to experiment with this, I hope this works, is that if you'd like to make a comment or ask Tom a question, press *5, and that I should see on my computer screen your hand raise, and I can call on you. So if you'd like to, if that doesn't work, then we'll try something else. But let's see if anyone would like to ask Tom a question. Hit *5.
Judy, while we're doing that, can I share something real quick here?
Yes, absolutely.
If you don't have a pencil and pen handy, try to locate one if you would. I'm going to give you a discount code here in a few minutes.
Oh, yes.
That if you're on the call today and you decide you'd like to purchase a copy of my book, I've got a code I can give you that you can use when you go online and buy it that will give you a 25% off discount. So just want to let you know that's coming before we hang up, and just to get ready for it. And Judy, help me remember to share that before we hang up.
Okay, I'm making a note on my notes right now, because that's okay. Really a wonderful gift. I'd love every single person on this book to, I mean, on this call to purchase your book. I don't think my suggestion of hitting star 5 worked, so we're going to try something else. Hold on just a minute.
Press 1 to mute all participants and disallow unmute. Press 2 to mute all participants and enable unmute. Press 3 to unmute all participants and all subsequent callers.
Okay, what I've done... Okay, I'm seeing some hands. Good, here we go. All
right. Am I still on?
Yes, I still hear you, and...
Okay.
Okay. I don't know who it was that I allowed to speak. It's not showing up yet, but... Whoever has the phone number 814-454-3675, you should be able to speak. And if that's not working... Okay, let's try this. I can't see in terms of the phone numbers. I'm sorry. Whoever has the phone number 860-989-0033, you are enabled to speak. You didn't have your hand up, but... For some reason, you are unmuted. So, if you'd like to speak, please go ahead and at least tell us what your name is.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, great. This is Shirley from Connecticut. How are you?
Hi, Shirley. How are you?
Hi, Shirley.
I've been on your emails for a long time, Judy.
Well, I'm glad you're on the call,
thanks.
Shirley.
Thanks, yeah. And this worked to jump in at this point to get the call, so I was looking forward to it today. And I shared it with a few friends, too. I don't know if they're on or not, from Connecticut. I liked what you said at the end there, Tom, about vision, purpose, and service, because I think one of the biggest things that I've found in my life, anyways, is how important the service part of that is. That, you know, if you do know what you want to do and you do have a vision for something else, that you really want to take action. You know, don't just mull about it or write a business plan and set it off in the corner. Just, you know, take some small action every day towards what that service might be and, like, allow it to develop, you know, and see what comes with intention, what comes out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found it to be true in working with that particular area?
Yes, absolutely. You know, there's two pieces to that. There's the idea of just taking steps every day to work towards whatever it is that you have envisioned. You know, there's a process that I use a lot with folks, and it's a visualization process where first just get people to kind of imagine yourself at some place in the future, and just allow all of the details of whatever it is you're doing in the world to come up, and we just spend some time kind of really getting in touch with whatever is going on in the future, that future time in their lives. And
uh-huh.
Then you go back and you say, okay, what were some steps that I took in order to get where I am at this place in the future? Who were some people that I needed to talk to? What were some experiences that I needed to have in order to prepare me to be in that place at that point in time? And then from there, you just start breaking that down into some very simple steps. And it might be as simple as, today I'm going to pick up and I'm going to call my friend so-and-so because
right.
I'm feeling like he might have some piece of this puzzle that I'm putting together. And just
right.
to break it down, simple little steps like that, because we can be overwhelmed sometimes when we get a hold of a big vision for the world. Or we start understanding, well, this is who I feel like I've really been born to be. Well, those can be some pretty daunting and powerful ideas when we first get a hold of them. And so it's important, I think, to then break it down, to take some very to break it down as small as we possibly can, and then to allow the journey itself to inform us as we go.
Right.
because we'll continue to find more things as we go along our path. We're going to continue to find out more things about the path itself that we didn't know when we first started out.
Right. One of the things I'm looking to do, I'm not sure when it's going to happen, but we might even do it in the early part of next year, is putting together a holistic cruise and just have holistic practitioners come along and then open to, you know, the people who would be interested in coming on a cruise like that, where there would be yoga and tai chi and qigong and meditation and all types of different, you know, workshops and classes. Not to an overwhelming point, but, you know, in a place where you would be comfortable and relaxed and the food would be there and, you know, you didn't have to worry about any of those things. So that's one of the things that I think just bring more people into the whole idea of taking good care of themselves, and that it's not that hard to incorporate that in your life, you know, just to start out by maybe taking what would be just something, some kind of a cruise somewhere, and turning it into something like, I can make those changes for 7 days, and maybe I'll carry through on them when I get home. You know?
Well, I think that's a great idea. Let me know.
I will. Yeah. I'll send you an email
I'm attracted from the standpoint of being there as potentially a teacher, but I'm really attracted from the standpoint of being there as a participant. Let somebody else take care of me for 7 days. So
wouldn't that be sweet, huh? I love that idea too.
thank you for your call. It was great.
Thank
great,
you.
Great
talk. Thank you, Judy, too, for having Tom on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Shirley. Do definitely let us know, and we'll get the word out.
Yeah, I'll send you an email. It's definitely going to happen. We just don't know when.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
Yep.
I see Kelly. Is it Kelly Brown? Actually, my notes here say Kelly or Todd. So you're free to speak if you had a question. Okay, not there. So let me call on someone else. Let's see if this works. I am unmuting the phone number 203-226-8828. You had your hand up.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, it's Martin Strathmore, also in Connecticut, your old grounds.
I didn't mean to call just on Connecticut people, but Martin, no, it's great to have you on the call.
Nice to be on. So this is kind of a statement and a question. I've been working, researching happiness for a workshop that we're doing for a group of people. And as I did it, I realized that I had a clear vision and purpose in my professional life. And now I've developed another one. So the question is, it seems to me that one can have more than one vision and more than one purpose. And that's what's happened for me. Because, and just to give you a sense of the vision, I came up with 100,000 by 2020, which means I want to impact the lives of 100,000 people by the year 2020 to help them move out of the cycle of poverty. And the numbers are actually much less than you would think, because I'm focusing on sustainable and appropriate technology. So the question,
Can I just ask as you go, because you said about moving people out of a life cycle of poverty. Did I hear that right?
Yes, the cycle of poverty.
Okay.
You know, the traps, you know. An example would be where they have to spend all their time collecting wood to burn a fire, which kills them because it gives them lung disease. They can't get educated, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
They don't have time for anything else.
And what's the other vision that you've come to recently, you said?
Well, my professional vision is around the kind of organizations I want to help create. I work as an organizational consultant and a leadership coach. And it's basically making organizations places where people can really experience their true nature and their brilliance.
Uh-huh.
And that I think I do pretty well where I work. But do you think you can have, I mean, I'm starting on the second one, and I'm 63 years old, so I'm moving somewhere. You know what I mean. It's a different phase of life.
Yeah. So the question that I think I'm hearing is, you know, do I think it's possible to have multiple visions? The acting in your life at one time.
Yes.
And I would say absolutely, but the other thing that I would say is that if you spent some time with these two visions as you've described them, you might start seeing that there is a greater vision that actually encompasses, you know, transcends and includes both of these visions. Mm. When you're talking about eradicating the cycle of poverty, and you're talking about making organizations or helping organizations to become places that people want to work in, and that, and I didn't get all the pieces of that, but what the image that came to me while you were speaking was the idea that, well, that's another form of poverty, isn't it? It's a poverty of the soul, perhaps, or it's a poverty of leadership. So what I would say from my perspective, the way I talk about vision, and there's plenty of ways to talk about vision, by the way. I don't pretend to say that what I'm saying in my book is the way, it's just my way, is that there is a vision for our life, and even that can even change over time, but there is an overarching vision that within which we can see these other vehicles for our vision starting to show up. So what I would look at is the way that your goal of 100,000 by 2020 is like it's a leg, it's a piece, it's a vision within a greater vision that maybe is still not fully articulated, but is trying to bubble up through these other things you're working on. Does that make sense at all?
Yes. Yeah, it's a good thinking. Yeah. I have something to think about.
Okay.
That's what we hope these calls do.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for calling. Nice talking to you.
I have just enabled phone number 816-377-0007 to ask your question or make your comment.
Hi, this is Diane, and I'm currently in Oklahoma. Thank you, Tom, for taking my call.
Sure, Diane. How are you?
I am great, doing much, much better from the time that we've worked together before.
Good.
And I just wanted to say, in working with you, it did cause me to stop and really look at what I was interested in, and, you know, I've gone back and forth several times, and now I feel like I do have something to work toward, a purpose to head toward, have the vision, I have the purpose, and I know the service,
uh-huh.
So I'm really excited about moving forward with this. And I'm heading up to Kansas City next week. I'll stay there for a month, and then I'm heading to the East Coast.
Wow. Well, that's great. It's really good to hear that things are moving in the right direction for you.
And I just want to encourage everyone on the call, if they have an opportunity, if they've not read Tom's book, get the book. But if you also have an opportunity to work with him one-on-one, do it, because he's great.
Oh.
And you don't answer questions for anyone. What you do is you ask them, it's like for me, it was questions that you would ask me that I would have to search out the answer from within.
Yeah.
And if the way you ask the questions, it's great. I think you're great.
Well, thank you, Diane. I appreciate that. You know, I often say that I have found a way to take the really annoying little kid who used to bug his teachers in elementary school asking question after question. I found a way to turn it into something that actually feels like it's serving other people. So thank you.
Yeah, transforming of your own gifts.
That's right.
Your shadow side into the gifts.
They showed up early, that's right.
Yeah. Well, it works very well, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Diane.
Thanks, Diane.
Bye.
Okay, I'm phone number 201-362-4042. That looks like New Jersey.
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
My name is Michael Collins. I'm connected to Judy on Facebook, and Tom, I'm midway through your book and enjoying it very much. Thank you for writing it.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, good. Thanks. Thanks for the comment.
My story, I guess, I had an epiphany probably 15 years ago on a business trip to Chicago where I opened the hotel drawer and picked up a Gideon's Bible and flipped it open to the book of Ecclesiastes. And the passages that he writes about of all this being a vanity of vanity and a grasping of the wind really, really struck me and opened my eyes to the fact that I was living and working without a vision or a purpose, and focus on the material gain and status, et cetera. But what I have struggled with since then, and it's been a good 15 years, is finding a concrete vision and purpose that I can live with. And I guess my question is, how do you address things like vocation versus avocation as to what we should be doing? Things that we're truly passionate about, how do we know whether that's the thing that is truly our calling around which careers, et cetera, should be built versus keeping that to the side as your avocation while you do something else for a living?
Mm. Yeah. You know, I was talking with somebody recently, and I said that oftentimes I feel like when I do a workshop or I present my book or I give a talk someplace, that sometimes it should have almost like a Surgeon General's warning on the side of it, like a pack of cigarettes that says, caution, this work could be hazardous to your worldview or something.
Don't try this at home.
I want you to try it at home, but be very careful as you do.
These are professionals. Do not attempt at home.
Yes, that's right. And the reason I think that is because my personal opinion is that we're living in a time of great change, but I think we're moving to a place where the idea of vocation and avocation will become more synonymous and more easily integrated one into the other. But to a large extent, I think that those of us who are trying to do that kind of work are to a certain extent pioneers. And so whenever I'm working with anybody, I never say, well, the first thing you need to do is quit your job, because I heard it put this way one time. We have to learn to do our survival dance before we can do our purpose dance. Right. And there are certain things we have to do to survive in the world. But having said that, when I talk about purpose, I don't talk about it from a perspective of roles. I talk about it from a perspective of essence. And so what I encourage people to do is to find a way that they can bring their essential essence, their essential nature, as they understand it best at any point in time, into everything they do. And it can come into their vocation, their work. It can and should be brought into their personal relationships with their family, their loved ones, their friends, their social community. The only time I advise anyone on vocation is if someone is absolutely feeling like there is just no way that they can be the person they feel like they have been born to be in the place that they're currently working, and that their soul's unfoldment would be best served if they go and find something else to do. So I don't know that really in a 2 or 3 minute response to your question answers it. It's a process, and it's a process of uncovering and discovery. But it's really, the work is more about avocation than vocation. And by golly, if we can figure out a way to marry them and make them one and the same, then that's all the better. And over time, I think we can. But sometimes it's a slow process, slower than we might like.
If I could ask a follow-up on that point, early in your book you talk about miasma, I think it is. Is that pronounced correctly?
My miasma, yeah. That was a dream I had that I talked about.
Yes, right. Yeah. And that, the term miasma and the environment that you're in, that either nurtures and enables one to find and live out their purpose of living versus other environments that are more toxic. Mm-hmm. I'm recognizing things in my environment that will make it difficult for me to come to this purpose and this vision and purpose. And I wonder if you just had any thoughts about the miasma and how do you work through it and perhaps transform your environment in a positive way.
Yeah. Well, don't forget that the other side that I talk about of that definition of miasma, it's an atmosphere that tends to corrupt, but it's also the old usage of that word. And what he's referring to is a dream that I had early when I was writing this book, and there's a character in the book that The only time he speaks in the entire dream, he uses that phrase. He says, "My miasma," and he's pointing to the environment he's in. And but the other side of that old, very old word has to do with an exhalation, a vaporous exhalation that causes a sense of corruption. And the point of all that is that we create our own realities to a large, to an entire extent. And so it may very well be that you are in that place that you are in right now because you are an aware person, an awakening person, a person who understands what's going on in a bigger way, and you have an influence to bring there as well. So, you know, it's possible that you could be the agent for change in that place that you're in. And so that's the other side of that. We do create our own realities. Having said all that, sometimes we do have to take care of ourselves and remove ourselves from dangerous or difficult environments so that we can do the work we've got to do someplace else and continue our path.
Right. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. And thanks for being my Facebook friend, Michael. All right. Well, we are running out of time, and so I have a few more things to wrap up. And thank you all for being on the call and for your questions. And let's first give everybody your website, Tom, and your email so that people can get a hold of you. And I don't know if you want to give out your phone number as well, but what information would you like to share with people about how they can get a hold of you? And
well, very quickly, the website is www.liveamythiclife.com, L-I-V-E, the letter A, M-Y-T-H-I-C, life, L-I-F-E.com, liveamythiclife.com. And there's just to keep the information being given out to a minimum so we don't lose track of things, there's actually a contact form on the website that if you go there, you can reach me through that. And before I forget, let me give this. Hopefully everybody's got something to write with. If you're on the call as a thank you for sticking it out for the hour, and if you don't yet have the book, you can purchase the book on my website. Go to liveamythiclife.com, and when you click on it, you'll be taken to another page that you can purchase the book. And when you go to the shopping cart, for that, use this discount code. It's NEXGNH6F, and I'll repeat that. It's N as in Nancy, E as in Edward, X as in xylophone, G as in George, N as in Nancy, H as in Harry, the letter 6, F as in Frank. And that'll give you a 25% off discount. And if you didn't get that, contact me through the website, and I'll email it to you directly.
Thank you so much for your generosity in doing that, Tom. I really hope that makes it easier for people to get your book and that they will do that. I'm going to make a few announcements about what's going on at the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace. I will do a closing quote, and then, Tom, I'll ask you for some final words of wisdom as we close out this call. So just a couple of announcements. We are reinstituting the Faith and Spirit at Work Awards, which honors organizations of 25 or more employees that have a commitment to nurturing the human spirit. And so if you know of organizations that are really explicit about nurturing the human spirit of their employees, please let me know. We're creating a selection committee, and these organizations that are selected in the next 12 months will then be honored at a conference that we're doing in 2011. And that conference is called Dialogue and Discovery. And the purpose of that conference is to bring together leading researchers, the award-winning organizations, and faith leaders together in dialogue about how we move together this integration that's happening around faith and spirituality in the workplace. Another announcement is tomorrow I'm going to be offering a webinar based on my research on people who walk between two worlds. That's what Tom and I are both really fascinated with, is this vision quest idea and the idea of the being able to get wisdom from the spiritual world to guide the material world. I call people who do that, people like Tom Anderson, I call them edgewalkers. And the way you can join that free webinar is to go to this website and click on teleclasses, and there'll be information on how to sign up. The website is www.masteruacademy, that's M-A-S-T-E-R, the letter U, the word academy, A-C-A-D-E-M-Y.com. And then you can click on teleclasses, and any of the teleclasses you can take for free. It's a wonderful offering that comes from Master U Academy. My final announcement is that our next teleconference guest is Don Wilkerson. He's the CEO of St. David's Health System in Austin, Texas, and he will be talking about his own personal integration of faith and spirituality in the workplace, as well as what they're doing in this hospital to nurture the human spirit of their employees. So we've got a number of good things coming up, and Tom, I just really want to thank you so much for being on this call and for being connected to the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace, and for the beautiful and powerful work that you're doing in the world and the many lives that you touch and the way that you enable so many others to touch more lives. It's such a beautiful ripple effect, and you never will know how many people you touch, but it's just an incredible blessing. So I'm going to do a closing quote and then turn it over to you. This comes again from Tom's book, Your Place in the World, and this is from page 162, if you have the book and want to follow along or make a note of it. Tom writes, "Here is the truth we need to know to slay the dragon called fear. We live in an abundant universe filled with limitless possibilities. Not only are all the resources needed to support our soul's desires available to us and ready to be deployed, but the universe actually needs for this to happen. The universe needs us to complete it. Do not believe you are not worthy of your dreams. If you can dream it, not only can you become it, you already are it. The only thing remaining is to claim it." Again, Tom, thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, Judy. It's been a real pleasure, and I want to thank everybody that's been on the call and for the questions and just for your presence. It's an honor to be here and to be able to just kind of hold and share some space with all of you for the past hour. And here's what I would just like to leave everybody with. I want you to know that this is what I believe about you. I believe that each and every one of us are heroes, and we carry within us a gift for our people. The gift is a blessing that can fuel a dream, create an abundant life, and even change the world. I also believe that we're living in an age that could use a few heroes, and so perhaps your time has come. And so I thank you. If you are stepping into your own heroic journey, I wish you deep mystery and great peace as you go forward.
Thank you so much. See you on the next call, everybody. Take care.